the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Let's read from the Bible together, shall we? Let's read a couple of passages.
First, one that might make you think it's Christmas, because you often get it in Christmas service readings and things like that. And then the passage that this is all based on. So, John chapter 1 is our first one, and that's on page 1004. Okay, page 1004, and you must have heard these words before. John chapter 1 and verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that had been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it, or the darkness has never put it out. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Now, if you want to turn back a few pages to the passage we're thinking about this morning, it's on page 916 and 917. And we've read these verses several times over the last few weeks, but let's have a look at them again. This is Matthew chapter 5, page 916. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 13. Jesus is speaking. It's the start of the Sermon on the Mount, his greatest piece of connected teaching that we have in the Gospels. And he says this in verse 13 on page 916. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. And here's the verse we're speaking about this morning. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. And then he says, in the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Well, now, many of us have been here over the last few weeks, and you know what's coming next. Some of you perhaps don't. You may be here as a result of the university special week that's taken place in this building over the last few days. And if so, fantastic to have you here. That's brilliant. And especially if you've become a Christian over the last week, you may be really interested in what Jesus is saying here. If you've not, you'll be equally interested, I hope, because this is really about what would happen to you if you did become a Christian. And for those of us who've been Christians for some time, it's interesting too, because here Jesus is saying in this passage exactly what our job is to be for the rest of our lives. We've been through a whole series on this. Oops, I'm using the wrong one. Dear me. There we go, that's better. And this is the way the series has gone. We're reaching towards the end of it now, and we're talking about this verse that I highlighted earlier on, lights go on stands, not under bowls. And we've had a look already at what Jesus meant when he said, you are the salt of the earth. But here's the verse we're looking at this morning. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but upon the lampstand, and it shines for all those in the house. What on earth is all that about? Well, as I say, we've talked about salt, and now we're talking about light. And one thing you've got to be careful about is not to read this verse the way that people often do. You see, it's become a kind of proverb in English, hasn't it? Don't hide your light under a bushel, which is a word for bowl, bucket, whatever that's used here, the word Greek word modios. Bushel was the word that you used in the days of William Tyndale about 500 years ago, and so it got into an early version of the Bible. Hiding your light under a bushel has become kind of like an English phrase, hasn't it? And according to the Cambridge Dictionary, it means to keep your good qualities and abilities secret from other people. If you go to Oxford, you find the same thing. Hide one's light under a bushel. And it gives you an example. Please don't hide your light under a bushel. The society needs your valuable expertise. And so your light is supposed to be some talent you've got that you're being modest about. And free dictionary on the internet has the same kind of thing. To hide one's light under a bushel, figuratively, to conceal one's good ideas or talents. And then it gives you some examples. Jane has some good ideas, but she doesn't speak very often. She hides her light under a bushel. Don't hide your light under a bushel. Share your thoughts with other people. And so it goes on. So the idea is you've got something inside you which is special, but you're too modest to let it out. Now, that is not really what Jesus is speaking about here. He's not speaking about some ability you've got. He's not speaking about something which is natural to you and not to anybody else. He's talking about something that you have received from him. Something special and important that you must share, not because you're immodest, not because you're bragging, but simply because it's something that everybody else needs to get a bit of. We talked about salt, and you've seen this slide several times over the last few weeks, mainly from Derek, not from me, and in it we talked about what salt is all about in the Bible: purity, piquancy, preservation, promises, and propagation. And propagation, we said, was the big one. Jesus is really talking about fertilizer here. When you get to light, what's light all about? Well, you trace your way back through the Old Testament, and you'll find that light is used as a picture for all kinds of things, for life, for a start. You see, the lamp that we're speaking about this morning, that was hidden under the bucket, was often found in graves. You'd keep an oil lamp burning permanently, just to say, these people are not gone. Their memory's not finished forever. We remember them. They live on in our memory. And once the lamp was snuffed out, that meant that nobody was caring for that person anymore. So it's a symbol of life. And throughout the Old Testament, you find the picture of a lamp being snuffed out, used again and again for the destruction of somebody's hopes, for the end of somebody's life. So it's about life. It's about hope as well. The Lord is my light and my salvation, says David in Psalm 27:1. And the light, the hope that we have in life comes from God himself. It's something we can't give ourselves. It's something that comes only from him. The joy of living a life that's right is part of the light thing as well. In Proverbs, for example, it talks about the commandments of the Lord as light, as something that brings us joy in life and prosperity. It means guidance. Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path, it says in Psalm 119. So light stands for all of those things, and it stands for revelation primarily as well. And that's what you read about in John, in that passage that we read about, isn't it? In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The hope, the point, the purpose of human beings. The life of Jesus brought something new into human life, a new dimension, a new perspective you would never get from anywhere else. And that light came down here and lights every man that comes into the world. Without him, there's no light at all. And so light comes to mean rescue as well. Jesus came to rescue us from the darkness and bring us into the light. And so 2 Corinthians 4 says that the God of this world has blinded the minds of those who don't believe, so that they cannot see the light of the gospel that displays the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. And then the Apostle Paul says, for what we preach is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, and ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, let light shine out of darkness, and he's talking about the moment of creation there. When God said, let light shine out of darkness, that was the first step. But since he's made his light shine in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of God's glory displayed in the face of Christ. So when it says you're the light of the world, what is light? I think you could define it like this. Light is everything that God can do for us that we can't do for ourselves. We can't give ourselves hope. We're stumbling in the darkness. We have no purpose, no understanding of who we are or where we're going without him. We need his light to make our life successful. And what about being a lamp? Because a lamp is the thing that receives the light and then broadcasts it around the house. What does it mean to be a lamp? And I think, again, if you look at the Bible, what it's really saying is this. Being a lamp is communicating not just a message, but everything that can make the reality of Jesus apparent to other human beings. So you are being a light when you share the Christian message with somebody else, when you tell them in words exactly what it means, what the deal is, how God can come into their life, how they can know Jesus Christ for themselves. But that's not the only time when you're being a light. You're being a light when you're acting like Jesus, when you're doing things that give other people glimpses of him. When you might not even realize it, but somebody's seen something you're doing and say, what are they on? Why did they do that? What's that all about? Why would somebody do something like that for somebody else? And they see in you something which draws them closer to Jesus Christ. And so sometimes Christians get downhearted and defeated and say, well, I've not really spoken about my faith to anybody in the last month. I'm a useless Christian. Some people seem to get into these conversations all the time. It doesn't seem to happen to me. Well, don't despair. You may be shedding more light than you realize. But don't let that be a get-out. I think, some people talk about the Christian faith, but I just show in my actions what it's all about. That's not enough either. You've got to be prepared to be a light in every possible way. And so when God gives you the chance to shine, however it comes, shine. Use words. Talk about it. So, what does this verse actually tell us? You are the light of the world. Well, I want to pick out just four things from it this morning, and we're doing well because we've got 10 minutes for all four, but let's see how we do. First thing is, it says, a lamp. Now, that's a different picture from last week. Last week, we were talking about a city set on a hill, and that's about us all being together, like here. And it's true that as a church, as a body of Christians, together, not separated, we can do stuff that none of us could do on our own. And that is fantastic. But we're made to be individual. We are a lamp, each of us. And the time when we shine is not just when we've all got our own little glow sticks into the building, making one big shining, but it's when we're out there on our own. As Alex says, sometimes it's when you feel like a lone wolf, or maybe a better image is a lone chicken amongst wolves. Out there on your own, the only Christian for miles around. And that's the way it goes. Sometimes for us, it's like that. What do you do? Take off uniform and mingle with crowd? Can't do that. You've got to be identifiable. You're made to be individual. So there are going to be situations in which you are the only Christian around and you still have to shine. Second thing is, you're made to be used. Nobody takes a light, says this verse, and hides it under a bucket. That would be stupid. You're wasting all potential usefulness of the lamp in that situation. So we're made to be used. We're made to be out there. And that's the third thing. We're made to be obvious as well. Instead of putting it under the bucket, you put it on a stand so that everybody can see it. And then this light shines out, and the fourth thing comes true, which is that we're made to be effective. It brings light to everybody in the house. And that's the way it works. So let's just look at those four things very, very quickly before we finish this morning. We're made to be individual. Do you remember Derek had a picture a bit like this one up last week? His was of the southwest, and I couldn't find that one. So you've got the whole of Britain and part of Germany, Holland, bit of northern France, and Denmark as well into the bargain there. But you can still see Exeter. Where's Exeter? Come on, show me. There we are, down there. That's our point of light in the southwest. And Derek said last week, didn't he, that the reason it glows like that at night is because you've got so much light all in one place, and you know it's a major center of population because it's glowing out in the darkness. And so last week we were speaking about a city set on a hill, not being hidden. I remember once traveling across to Lincoln to speak at a meeting where some friends of mine in a Christian rock group called The Advocates, this was many years ago, that's why they had that sort of name, they'd done some concerts locally, and lots of young people had become Christians. And they wanted me to go across and talk to them about how do you share your faith with your friends. I remember sitting in the train going between Nottingham and Lincoln and looking at some verses I might use. And I'd almost decided to use the verse that says, a city set on a hill cannot be hid. And then I looked out the train window just after I'd read those words. And it was magical. Because as you may know, there is only one hill in the whole of the county of Lincoln. It's one of the flattest counties in Britain. One hill in it, and that is the hill on which the city of Lincoln is built. And as I looked out of the train window, suddenly, across miles and miles of countryside, we're a long, long way from Lincoln, I could see the hill. I could see the city glowing in the evening light. And it was the most incredible illustration of that verse I could have hoped for. Miles away, but you couldn't hide it. It stuck out like a sore thumb. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. And when Lincoln City won their FA Cup tie the other week, there was one glorious moment on Match of the Day when the camera suddenly, for some reason, panned up from the pitch, up above the stand, and there behind the main grandstand, you could see Lincoln Cathedral, just like that, sitting on the hill, almost floating in the air above the football club. A city set on a hill cannot be hid. So when we're together, we're identifiable. This is the picture we're talking about this morning. A little, solo, individual light. Simplest, crudest thing you can imagine. A hole to put the oil in, a hole to put the wick in, and there you go. That's all you get. We found thousands of these things all over the ancient world because, obviously, they were the most simple, crude, basic item of equipment you could have. But vital. If you haven't got electric light, if you haven't got sodium lamps outside, what do you do when it gets dark? Go to bed and dream? There's not much else you can do, is there? Unless you've got some light in the house. And a lamp like that, humble as it is, can be massively, massively important. I think what this first point is saying to us is this. You can't be a crowd Christian. You can't be somebody who just comes to the big celebrations and puts on their Christian garb when they come in the door. And then you're a Christian for an hour and a half of glorious praise and celebration. And you go way back into your box again. You can't be like that. You're responsible out there on your own. You have a front line. You have friends. You've got relatives. You've got neighbours. You've got people that you know at work. You've got all sorts of folks whom you can reach for Jesus in a way that nobody else can. And you might shine into their lives in different ways than you're expecting. And it might take you a bit longer for your glare to make any impact on their eyeballs, but nonetheless, that's your front line. That's where you are. And you cannot be a crowd Christian and leave the job of lighting up the world to other people. You go into places that other lamps don't go into, and there you've got to radiate. Well, what was the second thing? A lamp is made to be used. That's the kind of bucket, bushel, bowl, whatever that's being spoken about here. That would hold about a bushel. And obviously, it's got nothing to do with lamps whatsoever. The last thing you want to do is turn it upside down and put the lamp inside it. I mean, why would you? It just means it's useless. All of that light is kept inside. And we are pretty good in the Christian church, you can see this down through history, at building around ourselves such a comfortable subculture that it acts like a bowl to stop the light getting anywhere but in our own circles. And we've got to smash through that. Get rid of the bowl that we'd like to put over us and just be out there on the stand. We're made to be used. And I think I'll leave out this story. No, I won't. I'll mention it anyhow. This is a small place in Mexico where a German missionary went in the early 18th century. It's not Mexico, actually. It's Lower California. But he was working amongst Indian tribes there. When he got there, that church didn't exist. He had to build that with his bare hands. And he lived out in the high, hot, dry, dusty desert. And it said that sometimes Begert used to mash up cactus fruit, put it on a plate, cover it in wine, and then eat it, pretending he was eating strawberries back in Germany. He was lonely, he was on his own, he was friendless, and he was working hard for God out there. And at that point, the Reformation had just happened, the great theological movement in Europe, which liberated people's minds and hearts to read the Bible for the first time in hundreds of years. We're going to be thinking a lot about that later on this year, because it's 500 years since Martin Luther nailed the theses on the door. And if you've got no idea what I'm talking about, then you'll find out later on this year. Fantastic moment in the church's history. And yet, Begert, as a Roman Catholic, wrote a little book when he'd finished his missionary work and gone back to Germany and found some real strawberries. And in the book he said, "What do you Protestants think you're doing? You're sitting at home by your warm stoves while the rest of the world is perishing. You know, you found some fantastic things in the Bible. Well, big deal. Unless you take them out and you take them to other people, what good does it do?" And there was a man who had paid his dues. He'd been out there. He said, "You Protestants, I'm impressed by your doctrine, not impressed by what you do." And too often there can be a gulf between having our doctrine right, having the correct ideas, knowing where we stand, enjoying all the things that we've been singing about Jesus and what he does to your life, and yet keeping it to ourselves. And as a result of Begert's words and other things that happened, the great Protestant missionary explosion of the 18th century eventually happened. And we started taking the gospel to parts of the world. It's one of the most fantastic stories in church history, but it almost never happened. And here's a guy standing on the sideline saying, yeah, you think you've got the gospel. You think you've got something special from God. Well, prove it by taking it out there. And so there's Begert's book for what it's worth. But he's just an example of what I'm talking about. So the second thing is, you can't be a crowd Christian and you can't be a closet Christian. You can't sit in the cupboard. You've got to be out there taking the message with you. That doesn't mean you have to give the four spiritual laws to every person you encounter on the street. You know, some people can, some can't. Let's be honest about that. I remember when I was a teenager reading some words that Bill Bright from Campus Crusade had once written, and they haunted me for years. I never get on a plane, he flew on a lot of planes, without assuming that God has put the person in the seat next to me sit there simply so that I can explain the gospel to them. Whoa, have I got to do that every time I get on a bus? Every time I get on a plane? And I used to feel such a failure if I sat next to somebody on the train, for example, and didn't get a chance to share my faith with them. And yet I hated it because I wasn't that good at it. I'm not the sort of person who can say, good afternoon, how are you? Have you heard of the great news of God's saving? I just can't do that. It's not me. You know, I need to know people. I need to talk to them for a while about other things. And I just can't do it with a stranger. Say, have you heard of the four spiritual laws? Okay, now let's pray together. I can't do it that fast. It just doesn't work. And your personality will be a large part of the way you shine. But however you do it anyway. You can't be a closet Christian. Somebody once said to the great evangelist D.L. Moody, I don't like the way you preach the gospel. And Moody said to him, okay, that's fine, okay, I'm always ready to learn. How do you preach the gospel? And I said, oh, I don't. And Moody said, well, I prefer the way I do it to the way you don't do it. And that's the secret, isn't it? However you do it, however it shines, you've got to be part of it. You can't be a closet Christian. Okay, two more points. We're made to be obvious. That's the thing about being put on a little wooden stand. Here's a picture of a building's near a railway station in Sweden. I took this just before Christmas last year. I was coming back to do a service at Christchurch Woodbury, and it was all about light. And I wanted to show what it's like in Sweden at night. Unfortunately, it had dawned before I took the picture, because it took a while to get to the station. But this is about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and you can see that a public building there. What you might not notice straight away is that although it's a weekend and that building's shut until Monday morning, every single window in that building is ablaze with candlelight. Every single one. And this is just a public building. Look at the houses around, you'll see the same thing. And that's one of the attractive things about Sweden in the winter. The fact that wherever you go, there are lights in all the windows, all over, everywhere, because they know the power of light shining out of darkness. And you can always tell when you're in a town because the light is all around you and people show it. Light is made to be obvious. The creepiest moment in that journey home, incidentally, was when we went past the local cemetery. And for some reason, there was a light burning on every gravestone. I told the Swedes about it after. Oh, we don't know why they were doing that. But it's true. Every single gravestone was alive with light. It's like a horror film. I'm watching Channel 4. But anyway. So light is made to be obvious. You're supposed to see it. And that says to us, you cannot be a concealed Christian either. You're going to be noticed. If you're a Christian and people know that you are or find out that you are, they're going to be watching you. There's no question about that. And so you need to reckon with that. You're going to be seen sometimes, as Alex says, at your worst times. If you're working under pressure with a group of people, they're going to see the rough side of you as well as the good side of you. You know what? That could even draw them to Christ. I remember a story not a million miles from here of a girl who was a Christian student with a perfect Christian boyfriend. And she moved into a house with some students who were not Christians, and she thought, right, this is my chance. I will witness to them by my perfect lifestyle and by the way I do everything so generously and kindly for them what Jesus is all about. They'll see what new life is about because I'm living with them. And she wasn't being arrogant. She was just trying to radiate Jesus. And she found that she got nowhere with them. Until you know what happened? Her perfect Christian boyfriend suddenly dumped her. And her friends came home one night to find her sitting at the kitchen table in floods of tears. She was a wreck. She was a mess. And for the next few weeks, she'd wake up in the middle of the night crying. And oh boy, here she goes again. They'd have to go into her room and comfort her and sort her out. And at the end of that time, she was so ashamed because she thought, I've really let the Lord down. I've really not been the happy, bouncy Christian I'm supposed to be. They'll never trust Jesus now. Do you know what? It was at that point that some of those students started saying, can we come to church with you? Because they'd seen the real her. They'd seen what she was really like. And they'd seen that beyond the brokenness and the mess and the contradictions, there was something real that was keeping her going that they just did not have. And sometimes it's when people see your frailty rather than your power, they start to realize the reality of Jesus. You can't be a concealed Christian, so reckon with that. Then the fourth and final thing, we're going to get there. We'll get a cup of coffee. Relax, you really will. Fourth thing is, made to be effective. And I'm not even going to talk about these 3 points because we haven't got time, generous, indiscriminate, and transformational. I just want to make the one point in finishing. We're made to make a difference. The light shines out from the stand, says this verse, to everybody in the house. And so we are supposed to be effective. And you might think, oh, that makes me feel guilty. I haven't brought anybody to Christ in the last 5 years. And there's a little cartoon I once saw, which I'm in two minds about. It was in a book about evangelism and how we help people become Christians. And it showed a fisherman like this one coming back from his fishing trip saying, well, I didn't actually catch any, but I did influence a few of them. I'm in two minds about that one. Because first, obviously, we have to do more than influence people. And we've got to be prepared, lovingly, to help them find their way right to the feet of Jesus. It's not enough just to say, I've explained some things to you, and please go away and think about them now, because I think it's very important to consider, and if you make the right decision, I'll see you in heaven. Goodbye. Can't do that. You've got to stick with it, haven't you, and get the job through. But on the other hand, sometimes all you will do with some people is influence them. You'll be one of a chain of people who are responsible for this one person finding out what it's all about in the end. I've often found that at the end of a meeting where somebody's come to me and said, please, will you pray with me? I want to become a Christian. I pray with them and I think, hey, another notch on the Bible. Whoa, I've done another one. Whoa, great. What a fantastic Billy Graham type figure I am. And then I say, so is this the first time that you've ever heard a Christian message? Say, oh, no. There was my Sunday school teacher way back. And my old granny's been praying for me for years. And I had this friend at work. And you begin to find out there's a whole chain of people involved. And you just had the privilege of doing the final bit. And you're the tip of the iceberg. The rest of this stuff was a whole chain of people who all added their own little bit of light to lead to the point. So don't worry if all you end up doing is influencing some people, because there will be others whom you will take right there. And God will use us all in different ways. Influencing, leading to Christ, it's all part of his plan in the end. Well, let's forget. Oops, I'm going the wrong way now. A new clicker, I'm pressing it the wrong way. Here we go. One of the people I like most is a guy called Joe Aldrich, who died just a few years ago. He was the president of a university in America, and he wrote a book called Lifestyle Evangelism, which is great, and one with an even better title, I think, which is Gentle Persuasion. And he was all about laid-back evangelism. He was tremendous about talking to other people about his faith, but he wouldn't rush it. And when somebody moved into his neighborhood, Joe was always the first person out there to meet them, to greet them, to help them settle in and so on. And even in that first conversation, he would say to them, oh, yeah, and I have four principles that have really changed my life, and sometime I'd like to explain them to you. And you'd see the look of resignation coming up, person, okay, go on then, sell me your little package, tell me your message, give it me now. And he'd stun them by saying, oh, no, not now, you're not ready yet. But when you're ready, I'll tell you. And then over the next few weeks, he'd just make friends with them. And drop into the conversation now and again. I've got those four principles to tell you sometime, but not yet, you're not ready for it. And the end result was, he's had people ring him up in the middle of the night saying, Joe, you've got to come around and tell me what those four things are right now. And you can imagine the power of making people wait like that. It's God's timing, not ours, and we can be relaxed about it, because here's something that he says, which I think is important. The biggest barriers to evangelism are not theological, they're social and cultural. Your neighbors probably don't have a theological axe to grind with you. They just think you're sort of weird. And that's the first barrier to get over. I'm a real person. I'm just like you. I'm just a beggar who's found bread, and I'm telling another beggar where to find it. That's the attitude we need to develop. And so Aldrich also says this. The issue at stake is not what I need to know as much as what I need to become. I can't share my faith with people. I need to know this. I need to know that. I don't have the theological knowledge. I don't have the historical background. It's not what you need to know. It's what you need to be, what you need to become, so that you can be that way. I won't even tell you about Henry Clay Trumbull this morning. It's a brilliant story, but you're going to have to wait for that one. The point of this whole thing is this. You can't be a colourless Christian. You can't just fade into the background. You've got to be out there, identifiable, helping people move forward. People should at least feel a little bit of the warmth of the light after they've been in your presence, however brief that encounter might have been. And so that's what this one verse is saying to us this morning. If you're the light of the world, You can't be a crowd Christian. You can't be a closet Christian. You can't be a concealed Christian. You can't be a colourless Christian. Let's go out there and shine.